What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 126 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Rasta Ray. And I'm joined here by my captivating co-host, former market maker of 20 years and current day retail trader and educator, the man back in his Vancouver days, kept a retainer like a teenage girl, the silverback of House Street. JJ, how's it going?
What's up, Ray? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. And our guest today, making his second appearance on the pod, hailing from Miami, Florida, former D1 athlete, founder of All Star Charts, a research platform for both professional retail investors. He's one of the most widely followed technical analysis in the world, earned his chartered market technician designation in 2008, and he's a frequent speaker at top investing conferences and universities. Juan Carlos Peretz, or as you guys know him, JC. JC, thanks for coming back, man. How are you doing?
Happy to do it. Couldn't be better. Let's go. Bull market. We're making money. I don't
Beautiful.
know if you've noticed, Ray. JJ, I don't know how much partying you guys are doing, but in bull markets, the parties are better. They are more frequent than the bear market parties. And the
Oh,
parties I've been
definitely.
going to are bull market parties. I don't know about you guys.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
I always laugh, JC, because it seems like you like to have a poke fun, have like some fun with the bears or the more pessimistic people. I'm just curious from your point of view, like why do people lean that way? Is it more of like the media, like because that stuff sells, so they talk about it, these headlines type of sell, or is it something about human beings, our psychology? Like, what is it from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of why the parties are better in bull markets.
Well, why, well, no, I mean, I think that's, you could touch on that if you want, but I think that's evident. But I see you, making the comments on Twitter. I think it's pretty, I mean, me and JJ have noticed this. A lot of people more hop on the down, when the market goes down for a day, everyone's like, oh, I told you so. But, there's people out there that are very just always gloom and doom. I mean, it seems more frequent to me than as opposed to someone like yourself that's like, hey, we've been in a 2-year bull market. I guess that's doesn't seem as frequent. I'm just wondering what you think the reasoning behind that is.
Well, I mean, listen, I think it's a lot of things. I think a lot of people are consumers of media, and it's not that there's too much media, there's too much noise. It comes back to filter failure. And it comes back to understanding as a member of society, as an investor, both, what sort of information are you consuming and who is putting together that information? Who is creating that content? Who's writing it? Who's creator of the podcast? Who's the video you're watching? Like, what are their motivations behind what they're doing? And I think it's really important. And if you're consuming, traditional, mass media, their incentives are not to tell you about the things that are happening in the world that are most important, that good or bad. They're there to just their only goal is to get you to come back and consume more content. That's it. It's not to give you the content you need. They're not there to help you. They don't claim to, right? It's kind of just a psychological misconception that they think that they're there to give them the information that they need. And I don't know. They just need you to come back. That's all that matters. As long as you keep coming back, they're winning. They get to whore themselves out to their precious sponsors and all of that stuff. That's just the business. It doesn't make journalists bad people. I'm friends with a ton of journalists. I've been doing TV and all and radio and the media forever. These are good friends of mine. I'm happy to go on TV or do whatever because they're not bad people. In fact, they're great people, actually. It's just that the incentives behind their jobs and the incentives are investors, it's different. It's just different. We're doing two different things, and that's okay,
Exactly.
right?
Yeah, exactly. Let me just hop in for a second because I've got to say, 3 years ago when you were on this podcast, we had this discussion and everyone was saying, oh, yeah, it's going to fall apart, blah, 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 blah. And you outlined how your outlook, and it was actually based on fact, it wasn't based on fiction. And those who would have listened to you 3 years ago would have been having a nice party, and smoking one of those cigars, which is in that beautiful humidor behind you. So Which I miss dearly, smoking cigars. But I just want to call out because, this man was on our podcast 3 years ago and everyone was like, oh, the S&P is going to 1800. And he's like, listen, you guys, like, give your head a shake. So sometimes you have to, the source of the information and also their level of skill, ladies and gentlemen. And here we have someone who has a level of skill and listen to him. Okay, I'm done.
Absolutely. Skill and experience. JC, I wanted to I didn't want to open up straight up with the markets. We'll come back to it. I want to, kind of just, revisit some of the topics we talked about the first time, your process, how you look at things. But I know you're a big sports fan and I love this time of year. We got football getting back into the swing. I got everyone down here is like super pumped for the Hurricanes. Like everyone I'm talking to is like real pumped. What's your outlook on them? I believe they're in the top 20, I think, in the preseason rankings. What do you think about the U this year?
Yeah, preseason rankings are like year-end targets, right? They don't mean a thing. It is just a marketing gimmick, right? And it works for Wall Street sell-side firms, and it works for the Associated Press and Sports Illustrated and all that. And humans just are, we're just dumb humans that eat it up, right? That's just the truth. And year-end targets for college football are those preseason polls, and you got your usual suspects in there, all the SEC schools, and of course Notre Dame's in the top 10, regardless of how bad they look or good. It's just, this, a tradition around here is what it is. And we'll see how things shake out. I think it starts with the quarterback, the fact that Cam Ward, we have like a real quarterback, because like Miami's got the speed, they got the playmakers. That's not the issue, right? We got that. They beefed up the line. You got a head coach who comes from the offensive line. Mario Cristobal actually grew up kitty corner to my grandparents. His grandfather built my grandparents' house, right? So like, there's a lot of old. I've watched this guy grow up, right? Like seriously, he played at Christopher Columbus High School right behind my grandparents, which is a rival high school that where I played baseball, not football. But I think they got the pieces right. The big uglies down low in the trenches, that's what win. Why do you think these SEC schools dominate? Because they're
For
winning in the
sure.
trenches, and then they'll give it to guys. So Miami's got more of an element of that mentality starting down low. They got the playmakers. Now they got a real quarterback. So if the defense can hold up, they're able to put up points. I mean, they should have a really successful season. They open up at Gainesville, right? So right off the bat, tough matchup. They should, they're favored. They should go in and win, and that will put them, that'll put them on the map. Wow, the Hurricanes are real. That whole thing again. U is back. We'll see.
I think it's good for college football if they're back, man.
Of
I miss
course.
those days, man. Like the early 2000s, the late 90s, oh my God, those teams were awesome, man, and just the attitude. How about the Dolphins, man? Man, I love the offense, man. One of the most like unique, explosive offenses I think we've seen in a long time in the NFL.
Right.
Hopefully they get a little bit deeper this year. I mean, what are you thinking? I love the coach.
I mean, listen, this goes back 40 years. The last time Miami had an explosive offense like this in the 80s, with Marino and Duper and Clayton and everything like that. So like the fact that that sort of offense and aggressive style is back, like, been a minute. So as fun as it is for the casual football fan to watch a team like Miami, do these things. Like for me as a Dolphins fan, die hard, season tickets my whole life. I mean, it's a dream come true. It's really for me. I'd love to, be in New Orleans with my father on the 50-yard line as, they're holding up the trophy and be like, Dad, we did it,
That'd be awesome, man. Yeah, I've been telling people, man, I think like the big thing is like they got to get home field advantage, man. Like having to go on the road in KC negative degree, it just doesn't play to the, and bring people to Miami, bring them to the stadium. I think that would make things a big difference for sure because they got the
They can
talent.
stay healthy. There's no reason why they shouldn't. Buffalo will find a way to blow it as usual, right? I mean, it'll be,
It'll be interesting season. A lot of good AFC teams all around. Now, last thing here, and I know we'll get into the market stuff, but I went to the Game One Stanley Cup Finals down here. You don't strike me as a hockey guy, but how about the best Florida team here, the Panthers?
About that. About that. And listen, when I was just a young kid, going to Panthers games. Panthers had some early success in the 90s, and I was around for all that. Cubans don't know nothing about no hockey. Ice, what is ice, dude? In Cuba, it's an island in the Caribbean, so it's just not a Cuban thing. But I'll tell you what, you know, I really enjoyed going to those games as a kid. Living in New York City for so long, I'd get invited to so many Rangers games. It was crazy. I was at Rangers games all the time, and it was awesome. They would play the Bruins. They'd play whenever the Bruins or the Devils, especially the Devils. Crazy. You think like Red Sox Yankees gets nasty? Dude, Devils Rangers, these people are insane. Like, these are scary people. And I loved every second of it. And so I'm a huge, and I go now, I take the kids to minor league hockey. I live in Eastern Pennsylvania now. So we go see Allentown. These are the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. They are like the AAA of the Phillies team, the
The Flyers.
Flyers.
That's awesome, man. I tell people this. I think like hockey is my favorite sport to watch live. It's something
Awesome.
else, man. The quickness, the physicality of it. I took my son to game one of the Stanley Cup Finals. We went to a few of the games, but the Stanley Cup game was electric, man. It
I
was
bet.
awesome. It was
I
so
bet.
good.
And the minor leagues, you got more scoring, more fights, and more mascots, right? So for the kids, it's the kids love it. And every time there's a stop and play, they're blasting beats, like just house beats. Everyone's dancing. You know, there's like 10 people there, so everyone gets on the Jumbotron, right? So like, it's a party. It's wild. It's some
That's
bull market
cool.
shit right there.
But bull
That's
market
cool.
shit. That's hilarious. I man, they got to market hockey better, man. The NHL's got to do a better job. I don't know, but and
Right.
I'm not gonna bother to ask you about the Marlins. We'll just move on.
I grew up an Orioles fan, believe it or not. You
Okay.
know, I want the Marlins to do well because I'm a Miami guy, but like I grew up an Orioles fan.
Orioles are doing good. Good roster, man. Good. I like Henderson a lot. JC, I want to congratulate you on the 12-year anniversary of All Star Charts. That's awesome, man.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Years, 13 years. Yeah, I don't know. It's been a minute. Been a minute.
Good, man. Congrats, man. Good work. One of the things I really appreciate about you and your approach to markets, and I think this could be said for life too. I mean, like you check the ego out the door. You don't know what the future holds. You kind of come from that place of not knowing. I think it's like a real simple concept, but at the same time, I think it's hard to implement. It takes people a while. Some people, out there struggle with it. Do you think it's just hard to drop our ego, or what do you think it's about it that's hard for people to do that?
I think it is an ego thing for sure. And you have to overcome it because instead of focusing all your attention on how right you are, how much money you're going to make because you're so right, and how you have it right and the market has it wrong, like a lot of people decide to spend their time on that stuff. When once you come to the realization that you do not know what's going to happen, you think you've got a hunch, the weight of the evidence might suggest, but you don't know. And that's okay, right? You don't know. So if we know that we don't know, then we just spend all our time managing the risk, right? We just focus on losing the least amount,
Bingo.
assuming we're going to be wrong. So we focus, instead of focus on all that side, we focus all on this side. So all we're trying to do is just not like try to keep the most amount of money when we end up being wrong, right? Because we're going to be wrong. We're
Of course, yeah.
any idiot could buy a stock that goes up. Like seriously. Anybody could do it. It's what you do with the ones that don't do that that separates profitability versus not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. That's greatly put. It focusing on things that it shifts your focus to things that actually matter. That's excellent. I'm just going to take a quick time out here to announce that our own microefutures.com trading room is now offering a 7-day free trial, no obligations, offering not only ES where JJ teaches and trades, but other future instruments, stocks, crypto, and for my real degenerates, DFS and sports betting, which I'm highly active in. Again, that's a 7-day free trial with no obligations or commitments. You can join us at microefutures.com. I guess I know we touched on this bull market. I don't say narrative, but we've been in a bull market for the past 2 years or so. I know for some of the listeners, that's hard to believe. But I guess just tell them why we're in a bull market.
Like I said, you've been to these parties lately? I mean, you know, these are just not, dude. I was at a luau on Saturday, Dude, they had a lady on the keys. She weighed like 600 pounds. There was this like dude with like a one of those skirts made out of like the hay or whatever, like the grass skirts, you know?
Little
This dude
skirt,
built,
yeah.
dude, like hula things. There's like those like you know, like totem pole Hawaiian things. They're not called totem poles, but they're kind of like those like made out of wood, like carved and like painted and shit. Dude, they this is in the backyard for the record, like down the block. And they got like a menu of the drinks. It was like a Hawaiian old fashioned. It was a Mai Tai with a menu. Like if you were at a restaurant, like in Hawaii, I'm like, this is, that doesn't
Nice.
happen in bear markets. I mean,
Yeah.
that's it. That's it. That's the analysis. We can all go home now.
That works for me.
But it's true.
What's
It's
a what,
true.
JC, what's a Hawaiian old fashioned? What's the difference between a regular one?
What was it? There was definitely bourbon in it. What did they do? There was definitely an umbrella, but I don't think it was just that. There was something else. There was something else. It's a good question. I was just more
Pineapple?
fascinated by the whole thing versus actually, I was like, whatever. Bring it. I wonder what it was. I'll get back to you. I'm curious now myself.
Get back to me on that one. JC, how many different strategies do you run?
Listen, that's a great question. I think it's, I never get asked this question because nobody cares. So, like, shout out to Ray for that. You know, people think about diversification in a lot of wrong ways, in my opinion. You know, they're like, oh yeah, I'm diversified. I got tech stocks and I got international stocks and I got emerging markets and I got a small cap fund that I'm diversified. It's like, no, you own a bunch of stocks, right? So, if the stock market goes up, you make money. If it goes down, you lose money. And you might be okay with that. And that's perfectly fine. And that's one strategy too. And I do have that, right? I've got long only portfolios that are in retirement accounts that are for kids' college funds, all those things. And it's money every month going in every month. And what ends up happening with those strategies is that you're buying at the highs, you're buying at the lows, and you're buying everywhere in between, right? But that's compounding every single month. And when the market's down 8%, I contribute in a given month, I contribute twice as much. Because if you've ever seen a chart of compound interest, that tail at the end, if you double up on the bad months, whoo, that tail really gets wild there at the end, right? And I know that because I've seen the compound interest chart a million times, right? Because this is what I do, and I have a million friends that are financial advisors. Anyway, so I've seen it and I get it. So that's one strategy that you can that I do for in a multitude of accounts, not just for retirement accounts, which I do, but for another separate individual account that I actually my wife and I have. So just S&P 500 is the greatest momentum strategy of all time. It buys more of the best ones and kicks out the worst ones. What else you want, right? There's a reason it goes up. It's literally built to go up. So we know that. So that's one strategy. But I think based on the white papers that I've read, the research that I've done, my own experience, and also common sense, is that you need a variety of different strategies that are as uncorrelated to one another as possible, right? So we have a strategy where we just sell strangles on the most liquid ETFs with the highest implied volatility every day. So we go every day. We have 35 ETFs that are the most liquid. You know them all, SPY, GDX, ARK, like you know the most liquid ETFs, right? 35 of those. We don't do it for stocks because we want to avoid that overnight risk because we're naked short, right? Strangles. So we're short out of the money calls, short out of the money puts. We just collect that income. Line go up. No, you know, the drawdowns are very minimal. I'm not gonna make a fortune, but I know that that line is going up. So even when the stock market is my long only portfolios are getting hit, I know that income portfolio is doing just fine and dandy. Thank you very much. And I'm good with that. I don't know if you'd want 10% of your portfolio in a strategy like that, or 20% or 30%. That's dependent on you, but that's a great portfolio diversifier in my experience. And then I have individual accounts where it's long short. And I could go long, I could go short. I'm taking advantage of whatever the market's doing. And that's my tactical portfolio. I could just go buy Tesla right now. I could buy Amazon calls. I can short Nike. I could do anything I want in that portfolio. And then I have a crypto portfolio. And that has its own multitude of strategies where I have a long short strategy where I could buy any cryptos that I want. But then I also have a sleeve that just owns Bitcoin and I'm long Bitcoin and I have NFTs in that portfolio and I've got private investments in the crypto space and Web3 in general. So like I'm good there. I'm good in the stock market. I own my house outright. I don't have a mortgage. I'm looking for another piece of real estate that I'm going to buy all in cash. So I'll have that real estate sleeve in addition to the real estate that I have right now. So I have a bond ladder strategy where it's always long treasury bonds. It's just the duration that changes. So maybe in some years I'm only getting 3-5%. And then some years I'll get 25% in my bond portfolio, right? But I know that that's a bond portfolio that's going to act completely different to the stock market and the long only and the crypto and the real estate. That's going to do its own thing because I'm changing the duration, but I'm always long bonds. So all of these strategies are somewhat related, like my long only equities portfolio and my real estate are probably going to move together. And I know that, and I'm okay with that, which forces me to go out of my way to get the rest of my money to be not moving with those things. Hence the bond strategy, hence the short strangles strategy. We've got a, I don't have currently my actual money running in a futures strategy that is mean reverting in nature, coming from positioning, you know, based on sentiment. That will be another portfolio diversifier for me that I don't have active money running on, but I will before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So that's cool. How I think about it. It's a long answer. I hope that.
No, helps. No, I love that. No, that was thorough. That was good. That's good for the people to hear. I guess JC, maybe like your tactical strategies, maybe let's say maybe is that more applicable for like retail traders? I'm thinking like for our audience. What's your time frame? From my understanding, I think you're kind of like in an intermediate ish time frame, maybe weeks, months. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, because of the research company that I own and we put out a bunch of research, it really starts from a research perspective. So it really is top down global macro, you know, starting with all of the asset classes, interest rates, not just in the United States, but around the world, all the stocks in the market, all the indexes, both in the United States and globally around the world, how all of the Forex markets are intertwined between all of those. And that's really where it all starts. And then we work our way down from there to decide if we want to be more exposed in financials or in energy, maybe in technology or maybe in real estate, right? Or maybe in materials or precious metals or whatever it is. And we'll work our way down. Then we have a series of scans and algorithms that spit out names that are more bottoms up. So we have one called the Young Aristocrats that are looking specifically for stocks that have raised their dividends every year for between 5 and 9 consecutive years. So that's a great fundamental filter, because if they have the ability to raise their dividends every year for a handful of years, or do something's going right. Like they're right. They gotta be doing something, mm-hmm. right. And, but they're not, it's not a 25 year consecutive dividend increases to become a dividend aristocrat, which that's what that is. When you raise your dividends every year for 25 straight years, you're a dividend aristocrat. Think Johnson & Johnson, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble. By the time you get there, it's probably not early in the cycle. So that's why we want to catch them in that 5 to 9 consecutive years, a great window. So that's one great scan that, and then we sort by relative strength. So not only are they increasing their dividends every year, but the stock keeps making new all-time highs. That's a great, something's going right. So that's a great quality filter right there. We've got the minor leaguers, that's all small caps. So anything from 1 billion to 4 billion in market cap, sort by relative strength, there's always leaders in small caps, this finds them. We've got the 2 to 100 club where we're looking for the next $100 billion company. That's gonna be a growth focused list of names that can get to 100 billion. So that you're not gonna find utilities or staples in that scan. That's gonna be a lot of technology, communications, internet, biotech, fintech, you know, that sort of stuff. So these are all bottoms up scans, and I could keep going, but I think you get the idea. We have a short interest list that we sort by short ratio, which is how many days to cover based on the current short interest and the average daily volume, right? So that's a great list of names that are about to pop. We have a volatility compression scan that takes the most compressed, the stocks showing the most compressed volatility in a specific universe. So from volatility compression comes volatility expansion. In other words, we can make money from that. So these, the top-down analysis supported by the bottoms-up analysis that we're doing, when we combine those, that's what puts the names on the radar and lights them up, and then we'll go ahead and execute accordingly, looking out 2 to 8 weeks, really, is the goal there. So we look at charts going back 100 years. We look at charts going back 30 years. We look at charts going back 3 months. Right.
Interesting. I guess I got a couple of questions on that. I'd say one, I guess, like, how did this 2 to 8 week, is this like from your guys' just experience, the type of research, like you're saying, that's the research team is doing? Like, how did that time period get like picked out, I guess?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's a combination of the thing of a few things. Number one, I think it's convenient for me, and it's one of the least hard time horizons.
Okay. Also,
what I mean by that is I don't have time to day trade every day, right? So for my lifestyle, that's just not going to work, right? Yeah. Like, could I make money, you know, penny pinching in 0 days to expiration options? Probably. I could probably figure it out. I have enough friends to do it. I could probably figure it out. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. In terms of, so thinking 2 to 8 weeks, that fits my lifestyle. That fits my personality. That works for me, which is convenient because I think that day trading is very difficult. I think that long-term investing is very difficult, and buying something that I have no idea what's going to happen next year. I don't know what I'm eating for lunch. You know, like, I don't know what's going to, like, how am I supposed to know what's going to happen next year? So that's too hard for me. So that 2 to 8 week window where I could find out if I'm wrong relatively quickly, right? It doesn't mean that I'm not looking at longer term trends. Quite the opposite. I'm starting with longer term trends, and I rarely want to be fighting those. Like, if I'm fighting longer term trends, I better have a good reason. Like, it's got to be a no-brainer fighting longer-term trends. So, like, I'm using that to my advantage. But that window fits my personality, and I think it's the least hard. And I don't want to say it's the easiest. That's probably a poor choice of words. But the least hard of the longer-term day trading and that intermediate term, that seems what makes the most sense to me anyway.
Got it. Now, when the scans that you've mentioned, when you get alerted to some tickers, is this where you're kind of using your CMT background to decide, hey, whether I want to take it or not, or are you taking all the trades? Like, what's the process from there when you get alerted?
Yeah. So let's say I'll get a stock and, you know, comes up on the radar on, let's say, the Young Aristocrats are paying their dividends increasing, it's breaking out of a big base, you know, looks great. It's like, okay, so we can buy the common stock. That's one way to do it. But you know, volatility is really compressed right now, and those call options are super cheap. So we're probably better off buying the calls or buying the common and using the calls as a kicker, in which case you could buy a further out of the money call option, you know, maybe speculate more. But we like that 25 delta call. You know, for every dollar that the stock moves, we want the option to move about a quarter, right? So that's that. You know, that balance between increasing your probability of success as well as using the right amount of leverage to maximize that. So that's that 25 delta we're looking for on the call options. You know, in some cases, shit's hitting the fan, volatility's elevated. We think something's sold off, like Berkshire Hathaway, they're selling this thing for no reason. We could sell the puts, right? Just collect the income. If it's a situation where, you know, not only do we want to bet that it's going to stop going down, in which case, not only do we just sell the puts naked, but what we could do is turn around and use that money to buy out of the money calls, in what is referred to as a risk reversal. So we sell the downside puts, you know, especially if there's a really well-defined risk level, because the risk management is very simple. If you're short naked puts, if at any point the price of that stock or ETF closes below the strike price of those naked puts, we unwind the trade right away. So if there's a very well-defined level where even if I'm long the common stock or I'm long anything, I want nothing to do with it if it's below that level, then I'll sell the puts against it if I'm getting paid for it and volatility is elevated. Hell yeah. And then I'll decide whether I also want to buy the calls or not.
Nice. Being a being a day trader, I guess, like, any maybe like shorter time frame, you got to be like more precise with your entries, more picky. With you, like, you know, with your time horizon, How precise are you being with the entries, or it's not, you know, because you have a longer time horizon, it's not as pertinent?
It's a great question. You know, we talk about it internally, and it's one of those things where there's no right answer. You know, even at our shop, you know, we'll some people are fighting for pennies, Some will give it a chance, give it another chance, and then just say, "Ah, just take it." You know, I trade the most liquid stuff. Like, I don't really mess it, and it also depends on the liquidity. Like, in a lot of cases, like I'll just put the middle. Like, if I'm buying an option, I'll just put the middle, and it takes it, not an issue. In the common stock, you know, in a lot of the liquid stuff, I mean, I'll even enter market orders. You know, which I know is a big no-no. JC, how could you? Blah blah blah. Yes, so sue me. You know, it depends on the how. Right, it depends on how liquid the market is.
Yeah, and you're positioning yourself. So a market order on a 6 to 8 week hold is different than a market order on a 4 minute trade,
Also
right?
true. Fair.
Right. It's completely different. So just a quick question. Do you sort of, for the folks at home, do you take the whole position right away, or do you kind of build into it and see how it reacts? Just
Yeah, it's a
curious.
great question. Almost always enter the full position. Sometimes like we'll be like, oh my God, volatility is so cheap. We could buy these calls like 12 months out. It's a joke. But let's ladder it and set limit orders in three levels. So if the market kind of sells off, we get knocked in at lower prices. You know,
Got it.
we don't need to get them all in at once or something like that. But that's like rare that we do that. It's usually all at once. We even had this debate yesterday because it's like, you know, one guy wanted to sell the puts and wait until like the stock got above its anchored VWAP to buy the calls, right? And the other argument was, I'm just not going to spend that much time doing it. Kind of like my argument, like I'd rather just get right. So there's no right or wrong answer. Like I said, even in my shop, we're still having, they're not so much debates because there's no right or wrong answer. It's whatever's best for you.
It's always interesting. So I'm asking these things like endlessly fascinate me. Like you could, you know, so many different points of views from it. JC, I want to ask you about volume because I don't know if it's a you kind of have a contrarian take on it. I know it's different than what some people would say, but I guess essentially you're only looking at volume to make sure the market is liquid enough to participate in. Why is volume not really a part of your analysis?
You know, Charlie Dow didn't have derivatives. You know, Charlie Dow had the stock market and the volume would be published, and that was it because there wasn't anything else going on. That's all that existed. And now you've got all these, you know, institutional black boxes going back and forth. And then you've got, you know, the derivatives market. So when you get like the volume, it's incomplete, and many times misleading. So I just really ignore it altogether. I don't use it as like a confirmation. I don't use it as like a divergence. You know, I'm really only looking at the volume to see if it's liquid enough is really what I'm doing. I look at volume also like, you know, when I can see size coming in a trade. You know, like the other day we were trying to buy Cinemark and it just wasn't liquid enough, the options market. So we were forced to buy the common stock, or we were gonna buy the common stock is what we're gonna do, because the options market just wasn't liquid enough. And then a 5,000 contract order comes in, splashes the market. We're like, holy shit. And you know, we got in and it's absolutely exploded since. So somebody knew something. So not only was that information that somebody knows something, throwing these 5,000 contracts on the offer, but also it made it liquid enough for us to play there too, you know?
Participate. Nice.
And then it exploded. It was making new 52-week highs last Monday. VIX is tripling. This motherfucker's making new 52-week highs.
Gotta love it. I believe JC, you use 200 SMA, simple moving average. Maybe look at momentum. I think interesting thing I came across. I know a lot of people. And even myself, I used to do this, kind of use moving averages like support resistance. I believe you don't believe in looking at it in that way. So I guess just, you know, talk to us about the moving averages and how you use them.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the moving averages are good to smooth out data because that's what a moving average is. It's a smoothing mechanism of data. So moving averages are great if you're trying to smooth your data, which I often am. You know, we're just talking about volatility compression, and we're smoothing out the volatility compression data, which is really just kind of like a derivative of, Bollinger Band width, if you will. It's, think of it like that. And having a smoothed out data so you can see crossovers, between that volatility and then what volatility has been doing, for signals. So that's very helpful. We look at like monthly and weekly, like MACD crossovers, and those are exponential moving averages. And we'll look at that, particularly, like for insider transactions. Like there's a huge, huge 13D being filed by a hedge fund. They're piling in, but we don't like it. We'll look for those longer term crossovers to kind of confirm, what, just because Nancy Pelosi's YOLO and Tesla doesn't mean I'm gonna. Right. I want to wait for, so that's a good way to do it. And then also, like from a breadth standpoint, I like to look at the percentage of stocks above their 200-day moving average, the percentage of stocks above their 50-day moving average, like that, particularly on the New York Stock Exchange, which is, the composition of that exchange is the most important in the whole world. So if you want any universe, look at the stocks that trade on the New York Stock Exchange, take that data, stocks only data. And so you could really see how many stocks are above. And there's nothing magical about 200-day. It could be the 203-day moving average. It could be the, 54-day moving average. You're going to get the same data, basically. Like, are more stocks going up or are more stocks going down? Right. And that's really the idea. 200-day being more, maybe more of a longer-term uptrend, because if you're above your 200-day moving average, you're probably not in a downtrend. And if you're below your 200-day moving average, you're probably not in an uptrend. And then you can quantify that shorter term with 50-day. I like to look at the percentage of stocks. In bear markets, for example, a great use of moving averages is to look at the percentage of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange that are above their 200-day moving average. What tends to happen, you'll get the break below 20. So there'll be fewer than 20% of the stocks in the New York Stock Exchange above their 200-day moving average. Those are extreme oversold readings. And that's not the time to buy the stocks. The time to buy the stocks is that when it gets back above 20, you want to buy the way back up. Go back and look at the data. That's when you want to be buying stocks on the way back up. So in extremes in market, in bear markets, you tend to see that towards the bottom. That historically has been a great indicator, probably why I was so bullish back in 2020, last time I talked to you, fine gentlemen.
It's taking the backside of the move. Very smart. Nice.
JC, I should ask you this when we're kind of like talking strategies. As you were just talking, I was thinking, from like the top down approach, are you more or less kind of staying? I mean, and perhaps you have different strategies for this, but more staying with the global trends within a sector. Are you looking maybe for stocks that are doing different than the trend? Maybe a mixture of both?
I mean, I'm looking for relative strength, not just relative to the rest of global equities, but relative to their peers. NVIDIA last year in 2023 was a good example. You had, a lot, most of the major in all the major indexes, I should say, were still below their 21, 22 highs, right? But you and even semiconductors as an index were still below their 2021, 22 highs, and NVIDIA was already breaking out to new all-time highs. So you had very few stocks making new highs, and NVIDIA already was. And then semiconductors as an index broke out above those levels. So now you've got NVIDIA already making new all-time highs. Now semiconductors as an index broke out above those prior highs, making new all-time highs. And the S&P 500 and the Dow and the Nasdaq still have not. Like that relative strength, not just semis versus the group, but then NVIDIA relative to semis, like that relative strength really stands out. Take a look at some of these, exchanges. Look at the Nasdaq, look at the CBOE, look at ICE, which owns the New York Stock Exchange, crushing it. Look at S&P Global, SPGI, $150 billion company making new all-time highs. These things have already been making new highs, right? The relative strength has been there, in financials, if you will, in the capital markets space. The capital markets has been the relative strength in the financial space, not regional banks, for example.
I think I read too somewhere, JC, that you use line charts in your analysis, and I'm not really familiar with them, but I believe they chart open and close.
Lines are only closes. So
just close. Okay.
Yeah, daily line charts give you daily closes. Weekly line charts give you weekly closes. Monthly line charts I use also give you only monthly closing data. It just connects the dots. It's speaking of great ways to smooth out data. You know, sure. You don't need moving averages. You could just use closing prices. You know, this goes back to Charlie Dow 101. You know, the closing price is the most important price, right? Yeah. So, you know, that and, you know, the closing, the weekly close is more important than the daily close, for example. And then with ratio charts, you know, when you're looking at relative strength, like if you want to see energy relative to the rest of the market, or if you want to see stocks versus bonds, or if you want to see China versus the US, or whatever ratio analysis you want to do, those line charts are really helpful versus, you know, like you wouldn't want to use a candlestick chart or a bar chart for that sort of stuff. You know, line charts really smooth that out so you can understand the trend of what you're trying to accomplish there.
That's cool. So it sort of maybe take away some noise, maybe like intraday noise and stuff of that nature. Of course. I like that. I like that a lot. JC,
not that there's anything wrong with using candlesticks. I use candlesticks every single day. Not that there's anything wrong with using bar charts. They're just, you know, different. You know, you're not gonna eat cheesecake for breakfast. You know, you're gonna have eggs and sausage and bacon and orange juice and coffee, right? Like toast or whatever, oatmeal, whatever it is. You're not gonna have a cheesecake. You're not gonna have like, you know, you're not gonna have a bronzino at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like that's just not the time for that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Save the bronzino for dinner, maybe lunch, you know, whatever. But
maybe if I'm hungover
at 7 a.m.
Oh man. All right. That's funny. Anything else, JC, like far as process wise, any indicators or factors that we haven't touched on that's important to you when making decisions?
Yeah. I mean, I just think it comes down to the weight of the evidence and, you know, understanding that it's a market of stocks and people, I think, forget that it's a market of stocks. They're like, oh, the S&P, the Dow, the NASDAQ, da, da, da. Like, you know, what's in the Dow? What's in the S&P 500? What's in the NASDAQ? What are those things doing? The things that are driving those indexes that you speak of. Oh, the Russell 2000. All right. Well, what's in the Russell 2000? You got 200 some banks. You got another 250 biotechs. That's a lot of banks and biotechs. So if you think that the Russell 2000 is going to go up, shit, man, those banks and biotechs better be doing well. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then that Russell 2000 ain't going to go nowhere. It doesn't matter what these small cap industrials are doing. The small cap industrials have been going up for 2 years. They've been going up for 2 years. You asking me why is bull market for the last 2 years? Yeah, the parties have been better, but stocks have been going up. What happens in a bull market? Stocks go up. More stocks go up. More sectors go up. More countries around the world go up. Bull market. What happens in bear markets? Stocks go down. More stock. You know, you need stocks to go down for it to be a bear market. And exactly. The prices of stocks have not been going down. Look at the list of new 1 month lows, 3 month lows, 6 month lows, 12 month lows. Nada. Zilch. So without stocks going down in price, you cannot have a correction. That's just math. That's the beauty of the market. It's not about opinions or egos. Oh my God, JC thinks this. It doesn't matter what I think. It literally is just math. Prices of stocks aren't going down. That's not, you can't have a bear market without that. Bull market parties. Stocks aren't going down. New highs list keeps going up. July, you have the most amount of stocks above their 200-day moving average this entire bull market. You have the most amount of new 52-week highs in the New York Stock Exchange. This entire bull market. You have the most amount of new 52-week highs on the NASDAQ this entire bull market. You cannot tell me that things are getting worse if mathematically they keep getting better.
Exactly.
It might be an illness. Why. I think it's an illness.
People love the doom. They love the doom. I don't know. It's like those disaster movies, you know, where the world ends or freezes over and stuff like that. People love that stuff.
I'd say it's got to be something with the way humans are wired. I'm sure someone has a good explanation for this. What was I going to ask you, JC? I forget.
Maybe they weren't in it. You know, maybe they, you know, like different people.
It's like fear like drives us more than like the other emotions. I don't know.
It comes back to personal biases. You know, a lot of people think that the market mean reverts, market trends. It's volatility that mean reverts. People think volatility trends, like they have it backwards. They think the market is always, oh, it's overbought, it's got to go down. Oh, it's oversold, it's got to go up. Right. I don't know. If it's overbought, it's probably going higher. It's oversold, it's probably going low. You know, like asset prices trend, volatility is what mean reverts. People are like, oh, VIX is at 60. It's going to go to 600. Nope. Back to 19, you know?
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of like, I don't know, like the, you know, people like the market efficient theory. Like, do you think the market's efficient, or you think it is exploitable?
I think that the market is almost efficient. Therefore, by definition, making it inefficient. And we see these inefficiencies all the time, right? So if the market were efficient, you know, like, you know, that VIX 65 or something is like a 8 sigma event or something like that. That means that would happen once every like 4 billion years or something ridiculous. But like something like that happens every day. So, you know, 12 sigma move in Brazil, the Brazil ETF, like these things happen all the time.
Big shout out to Brazil, by the way. We got a lot of love for Brazil.
Shout out to Brazil, one of the best performing countries, the Bovespa, so far this year. Excuse me, so far this month.
Yeah. Yep. I guess on a different note here, JC, I like, you know, before we have guests on, I like to just like go through their Twitter. Maybe I can find something like, you know, funny or whatever, a little tidbit, but I thought this one was funny. You're listening to 30-year-old rap songs with your 1-year-old twins is pretty cool. They're into it. First off, congrats on having twins.
Thank you.
That's awesome. But so what 30-year-old rap songs that they like?
You know, they like hip hop hooray, you know, Naughty by Nature, because they get put their hands in the air and they go hip hop hooray. Oh, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's, you got to remember the reason they like those songs, right? It has nothing, they don't know anything about Naughty by Nature, right? but they like the fact that they can put their hands up in the air, you know? They like, you know, I just actually introduced them to Rapper's Delight. And it is a hip, 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 you know, like they say that, you know, so it's like little things that they like catch on to that grabs their attention that like adults wouldn't necessarily think about. Like they could say, they're only one, so they could say hip, hip, when, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of, like Biggie, they're just not into Biggie. I think it's like too slow and boring for them.
Yeah, maybe it's funny. It's cause it made me laugh, and I wanted to say this because like I assume we probably like the same type of hip hop, and you know, I've always played it. My son's 10 now, and so he has a more understanding, and he's like really getting into music now. And it's funny, like he loves Nas, he likes Mobb Deep, some of these things like that. I was listening to, and I'm like, yo, what? And he's like, because we go to football to get pumped up before football. I was like, yo, put on Made You Look, Nas. I'm like, oh, okay, all right.
So they're just the Nas, the Biggie, like that like kind of like R&B kind of style from that period that I love, and clearly you do too. Like, it's just too slow. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like I love it because it's chill and everything like that. But for them, they need more pop. You know, they're listening to my daughter's freaking Shake It Off, Taylor Swift. That Shake It Off is on nonstop. And then she's got the other one, Dance Monkey. Dance Monkey. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, my God. Man. Nonstop. Taylor Swift and Dance Monkey all day long around here.
Oh, man. God,
so it's
God
hard to go there. Down to Biggie for the boys.
Sure. Yeah, maybe with time. No, it's you know, it's hard. I mean, there's some newer hip hop artists I like, but they're kind of more up that alley of rap than like some of this other stuff, which, you know, I don't know, it's a hard time for me to get into it. But I guess last thing here, JC, I'll ask you, we'll get you going on your way. Who would be three traders, right, dead or alive, traders or investors, that you would want to have dinner with?
Three investors, dead or alive, that I'd want to have dinner with? I guess I gotta go Warren Buffett, Edwards and McGee. Like, I would count them as, you know, Warren Buffett and Edwards and McGee and Charlie Dow. Okay, yeah, that's nice. Probably right.
Who's Edwards and McGee? I'm not aware of them.
Edwards and McGee wrote Technical Analysis of Stock Trends, which is the Bible of technical analysis. That came like in the 1940s.
Okay.
So they took, like, you know, a lot of the work, you know, how you always hear, like, you know, they stand on the shoulders of giants or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a good example of, they took a lot of the work that was done by Charlie Dow and a few guys, like Ralph Nelson Elliott. Like, these were like guys along the way that like this made discoveries and like published their studies and their work that kind of like, you know, it built up to the Edwards and McGee, and then work has been done since then and continues to be done in the market. Plus we have more data, we have better technology, better tools in which to gauge things, you know, and with that comes a bunch of more bullshit and things that don't matter and are completely sure. useless, and we don't need those things. But there are great tools that have been developed. There's new data sources. Look at cryptocurrencies, for example. The fact that everything's on chain and you have full transparency of every transaction that's happening in any wallet in the entire world in real time is information we don't have in TradFi, for example, right? You know, I have to wait 48 hours for an insider transaction filing. In the blockchain, you get that in real time. These 13Ds come weeks, you know, the SEC filings for the hedge funds come weeks later. These 13Fs, they come months later. All yeah. in the blockchain, you're seeing that in real time. You're seeing the size cool. of the wallets. And so, you know, every single token in the entire world, which wallets those tokens are in, and you can see the size of those wallets, and you can see the track records of all of those wallets. So you're able to see everything in real time. You don't have that in TradFi. So you're able to build all these new tools because you have all this new data for the first time, and market's not going to stop evolving. Eventually, all stocks are going to be trading on the blockchain. We're going to have all that data in real time, eventually, hopefully. But what we have in DeFi, I mean, it's truly fascinating for someone like me who's trained more traditionally in old school financial markets, you know?
That's interesting. I we've had discussions when we've had crypto people on about these things. It just seems like it makes too much sense, for sure. Interesting. Back to that Edwards and McGee, would you recommend this book for myself or listeners? I haven't read. Is this something you'd definitely recommend going back, even though it was a little bit written a while ago?
100%. Read it, and when you're done, read it again.
Great. I guess the last thing, I know I said that was the last thing, one more thing. For people who may be on the fence, interested in becoming a chartered market technician, getting their CMT, something you recommend?
100%. You know, it's a great community. You know, you take some exams, three levels, just like the CFA, but it's technical analysis instead of fundamental analysis. If you're a sell side analyst, you get exempt from like your Series 86 or one of those. So that's cool. You know, it really just gives you the body of knowledge. It doesn't like, you know, once you're done, that's when the process really begins, right? All you're doing is really just getting the body of knowledge so you understand what everything is. Then you got to go and apply it to the market and go through your own experience. But that body of knowledge is really, really helpful. Not to mention the community that you then get to be associated with, because I could tell you firsthand. I mean, I've been to, you know, I've hung out with CMTs in, I don't know, 30 different countries around the world. You know, nice. And I mean, just beautiful people, bro. Like just math nerds in Mumbai or in Delhi or in Hong Kong or Singapore, Taiwan, Dublin, you know, having pints in Dublin with CMTs, or, you know, at Bloomberg in London, or at Reuters in Singapore, and then go and have drinks and, you know, in I'm in Malaysia, you know, partying with monkeys. And then, you know, they take me for pizza. I got taken. These CMTs, they take me for pizza in Malaysia. Here I am in Kuala Lumpur. I'm like, we're going That's out hilarious. For pizza. True story. They're like, I thought this is what you would like. I'm like, no, bro, I'm in Malaysia, dog. Like, can I get some pizza? This is terrible pizza. I don't want to eat this shit.
Yeah, that's so funny.
My wife and I are in Kuala Lumpur. I give a presentation. It was great. These are the sweetest guys in the world eating pizza.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's hilarious. What was, just because you brought it up, any favorite place that you visited overseas? Which one you had the most fun in? Or just fascinating city culture?
I mean, probably Japan and Greece. You know, I'd maybe group Italy and Greece maybe together, mm-hmm. just because I love all of it, from, you know, the islands of Greece to, you know, the mountains in Tuscany, and the wine, you know, I'm a wine guy, so the whole thing, you know, for me is the Mediterranean is just magical for me. And then Japan, I mean, Kyoto is like, I mean, my heart like melts just thinking about Kyoto. Like, it is like the most magical place. Oh,
wow,
brings a tear to my eye. I love it so much.
Yeah, Japan, like, for whatever reason, for me, that's like the one place I want to go. Like, it just seems so fascinating. I really like their culture. Just that, yeah, it looks really cool.
Because we go to Europe from the United States, and yeah, the buildings are older, the accents are different, the food is, better, but it's not that different,
Right.
Then you go to Japan and it's like Mars,
Yeah.
which
Yeah.
is so, and it's like Mars, but with like the best food ever, like the best steak, the best sushi, the best noodle, like just the best of everything. And they love Americans.
Yeah.
And the sumo wrestling is crazy, like just insane. The baseball games are like, dude, the baseball games in Japan is like, if it's like the bottom of the ninth, full count, bases loaded, like this is it, but like the whole game.
Really?
It's
Wow.
like people going crazy, and then like they hit a home run and they do these like umbrella dances. Everybody brings an umbrella to the game. Dude, it is wild, man. It is like, the beer guy is not like this fat, hairy going, beer. No. It's like a smoking hot, Japanese waitress, like with a book bag of a keg, and brings you the beers and pours. Like, dude, it is something else, man. It is, they're doing something right in that country, let me tell you.
They are, man. Oh, that's awesome. I'm completely, if I wasn't sold, I am now. That's funny, man. They strike me as like they take everything like no matter what the job is, they take they, there's a lot of respect. They take everything very like
They're
where
super proud.
we might look down on certain jobs. I don't think they are like that. They treat everything like I'm gonna give it my best effort or like.
To an obsessive point where like the heart attacks and like the anxiety levels that these poor people have in some cases, because like they're just so like it has to be perfect, and like it literally drives people crazy, as you can imagine. But what ends up happening is you get these unbelievable things that like dumb Americans like us can just go there and take advantage of, and like love everything about it. And they love Americans, dude. Like, I get treated so well there.
Yeah,
So well.
that's awesome. I can't wait to go.
Yeah,
And with
100%.
that, we're going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed the episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive professional trading room, you can join us at microefutures.com. JC, tell the people where they can find you. Anything else you want them to know?
Yeah, man, go to allstarcharts.com. Check out, thoughts on the market, stocks, commodities, currencies, trade ideas, the whole thing. You can catch me on Stock Market TV every weekday morning, 8:30 to 10, talking markets. We've got great interviews. I'm very fortunate to be friends with some of the best minds on the street, traders, analysts, authors, the whole thing. So we get some great guests. So it's StockMarketTV.com, 8:30 to 10 on weekdays. Go to allstarcharts.com, say what's up, and find me on Twitter at allstarcharts.
Excellent. Check them out, guys. JJ, parting thoughts?
That once again, a pleasure having you on, and keep coming back and help keep us in line. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Anytime you guys want, I'm around.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So for Juan Carlos, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the gorilla of House Street. Use stops, though.